And we're here on the K&M Podcast. Ken Brown from WGR Radio, Michael here at DetroitLions.com as we talk Lions football. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ken
Brown. Combine Mike. Hello.
Combine Mike. This is one of those years I'm not there, and I miss it. I really do.
But you just missed the interview part. You don't miss all the other junk that goes on.
I love yakking with other people. What a surprise.
Well, if you would have been there yesterday, you would have had a big surprise if you were waiting for Jalen Carter to step up to the podium, because when it was time to step up to the podium, Jalen Carter had to go back to Atlanta to get arrested. The big thing from yesterday comes out right on the combine day that he had getting charged with a couple of misdemeanors. And will this throw his draft status into doubt? Will it drop him down the board? Will it not matter? These are questions to be answered by as the combine turns.
And didn't he fly back?
He flew back to get arrested. Then, yeah. And he flew back today and doing the interviews.
Indianapolis, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing his interviews. So I was a little more skeptical yesterday of his draft status until I thought about it overnight. And as bad as it is, and there's some things he's going to have to live with and some things that he did or shouldn't do and being irresponsible, I don't think it's going to hurt his draft status too much unless something else comes out.
Right. I agree with you, Ken. And look, there are legal issues and there are football issues. And with the football issues, look, none of these kids coming out are perfect. They really aren't. I'm talking about perfect players. And sometimes they're not perfect citizens, but I don't think there's enough there to really – look, if you liked him before at 2, 3, or 4, you'll still like him, I would think.
Right. And like I said, those things go down, but I just think the talent – you know, and I hate to say it in this world, but a lot of times talent overrules a lot of other things. I just – every time I see these incidents, and somebody should sit them down and talk to them, man, because, you know, you're risking – generational wealth on stupid acts. You know, that could have been your car that got killed. And I always think back to Reggie Rogers and the three kids he killed in Pontiac and the career he could have had. Reggie's dead now, but the career he could have had and how it ended up. And these are just things that were all from acts that he chose to do that ruined a career.
You know, and it started with his brother, you know.
Yeah.
It really started with his brother, and then he, you know, that could have been a life lesson for him. And he made a nice, you know, presentation and speech, you know, when the Lions drafted him about what it meant to him. And this was a chance for the family and all that. And turned out that, you know, pretty much followed the same path.
Right. And for those who were doing this talk, it's not being good or bad or good or evil, because I met Reggie Rogers a lot of times. And he was not a bad guy. It was just that the demons got to him. He was a very good. He was a good guy. He just had demons, man. He just had things he couldn't do.
He was a sociable guy, but he had issues.
He just couldn't get over his issues. So
he never did. Yeah,
Jalen Carter, I hope you take heed, and you may have got better than you deserve on this, but learn something from it if you get out of this situation. And, you know, remember the people that didn't make it through that night. So that's all I'm going to say on that. Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell spoke yesterday, Mike. Did you get anything out of that?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, first from Brad Holmes, where he talked about accountability and all that, and he held himself accountable. This is right up your alley. You can take, you'll knock this one out of the park on the first swing, but how he did not do a good job building the quarterback room in 2 years. And now they're really starting from the bottom. To add to what they already have with Jared Goff, but he really held himself accountable for the Detroit Lions. You know, not only not just having, you know, adequate backups, but really they developed nothing for the future in those 2 years with the players they had. That was with Brad, and then with Dan Campbell. Listen, I could just listen to him talk about anything, just about, because you're going to get something. And it's, I think we found from him in 2 years that, you know, he has sort of that Texas drawl, but this is a very, very sharp cookie. He's smart, and he knows how to talk, and he knows what he's saying, and it's not a clown act like some people tried to portray at all.
No.
But one of the things that really, really stood out with me, and something I'm writing for DetroitLions.com, I think it's next week, is what he talked about. He'd rather talk to the players than watch them run these drills, because you get who they really are out of that. And he's not down in the drills are what they are, but you're going to get all those measurables and all that, you know, from the scouts and all that. He wants to look them in the eye, and what do they have to say? And he says the more they can talk, the better he likes them. Not because he's not looking for entertainment. He's looking for what they believe in. And to me, that was the guys who have the right answers are going to go right up his alley. And Kenny, not to keep yakking about this, but look who they've added in the last couple of years. Look in the first round with Penei Sewell and then Aiden Hutchinson. That's in the first round. Look who they got in the sixth round. Look who they got in the fifth round, players who like to play football.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep it short and sweet, unlike yourself. I will keep it short and sweet on this. I learned from the 2 years today that they could draft anybody. They're only going to draft players that fit the Lions' new philosophy. And number three, don't think that if they draft a player, he won't be Dan Campbell type of player. That's all I'm going to say. That's what I learned out of from both talks yesterday. And the last thing on free agents, they may not go get a big money one, but the ones they get will be players that can fit the holes they need fit.
Yeah, I don't think you're right with you. They're not trying to win the award for the highest contract and all that other stuff. They're trying to get players who fit what they do. You're exactly right on that.
Right. All right, and a couple other things. Michael Brockers got cut between the last time I believe we talked. He may have been cut then. I don't remember. But there might be a couple of more cuts. I know people are thinking that maybe Big V might either be for restructuring or a cut, and the Aquara might not make it through. It was
Which
Charles
one?
Harris last week, the Romeo. So
yeah.
These are people that might be on the cut block, and we'll see how this goes forward because free agency is going to start in a couple of weeks. And they can free up some more money. They got a nice chunk of change free now, but they could actually free up some more. So these are things to look out for in the next week or two.
Yeah, and if they free up money, okay, they don't have to spend it this year. They can spend it next year,
that's
too.
Right.
And
that's
the way the rules are.
Yep. No
Eventually,
unis.
They'll spend it.
No
yeah.
unis this year. There'll be next year for all you uni people. There will be an audition. There'll be an extra helmet next year, so we'll wait to see how that looks. But that's about it, the helmet.
Is that the 2023 season, the helmet?
Yeah, the 2023 season. They have a second helmet. So all you uniform guys, and I'm one of them, we have to wait another year, so that's okay. So that's going to wrap up that part of it. But we have a special guest today, Mr. Michael Hare.
Yeah, tell him who it is.
Well, we're bringing on Scott Bischoff. From the Detroit Lions podcast. He's a draft expert. We'll bring him on. And he will tell us more about the Combine. And to talk about the NFL Combine, the draft upcoming, Michael Hare, I had to go get another expert out because, you know, I know you're an expert, but I just had to go get another expert. I went and got Scott Bischoff from Detroit Lions podcast on with us, our draft friend we've known for many a year. Hello, Scott.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right.
Everybody good?
A lot of pep in the step on Combine Week, and even Michael Hare has a pep in his step this week.
Well, Scott, let me just tell you this. When Kenny Brown refers to me as an expert on anything, I'm starting to wonder about him and then me too.
Yeah, I was thinking the same stuff. Like, you sure you called the right guy?
Well, while we're on the subject, the Combine over the years, and I can remember it back, and Mike, you can too, when it was first started or when they first started really publicizing it to what it's become now. And this is me looking from the outside. Sometimes it's getting away from what the real intentions of the Combine were. And I think outside of the medicals, which they get all the players here together and it's easier for the NFL to get one evaluation, I don't like what it's becoming. It's becoming too fan-friendly more than actual, evaluation.
Well, I think it's a combination of that too, Kenny. I agree with you, by the way, overall. But I remember, and this is kind of weird, but back in 1983, they had what they then, it wasn't the Combine, but their version of it back in 1983, they had it at the Silver Dome. And I'd been on the beat for, 6 years, something like that. And I didn't even know the players were there. And that was when all those great players were there, it was just an amazing collection of great, great prospects and then who became Hall of Fame players. And now can't turn around without seeing another player.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing to consider too is the it's great to get the medicals and all that stuff, but the other part is meeting with the teams and the stuff that's not on TV. All the stuff that's on TV is a little bit like you guys are both saying the it's fan driven, overblown stuff. There are elements of the things that they do that are relevant that do matter, but does it really matter what an offensive lineman does in a 40-yard dash? Really? I don't think so.
No, not at all.
I agree with you, but I think part of it is that they want to see how they compete, and that's, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if I'm an agent, I'm not so sure I might want to see my player try to compete in February. That's the other part.
Yeah, and they spend so much time, after the football season's over, they stop practicing football and working on football stuff, and they do combine stuff, learning how to vertical jump and broad jump and run the 40 and start well and all those things. And it's become, I think, you know, over the last 5-7 years or so, you've seen these times, you know, everything, all the performances get ratcheted up to where, you know, generally speaking, I think everybody's performing better athletically than they used to. There are specific things like, you know, for offensive linemen, defensive linemen, you want to see what they do with the broad jump and the vertical jump, that shows some leg explosiveness kind of stuff. The 10-yard split in the 40-yard dash is very important. It's seriously important. Another thing that's really important, is a very big indicator for offensive line play, is the 3-cone time. And,
right.
Offensive linemen who perform well in the 3-cone time tend to pan out at the NFL level. So there are some things that matter, but it's become so fan-driven. And, I mean, there's betting. You can place prop bets on just about anything at this point. It's just, yeah.
Yeah,
it's just different than it
used to be. Getting a little out there. But,
can I just add one thing, guys? Can I just add one thing to this, too? We talked to Penny Sewell last year, and after he'd been drafted, I think, 7th overall by the Lions 2 years ago, and asked him what was the difference in his second year than his first year. And Penny said, I'm in so much better shape now. He said, last year I was training for the combine. He said, this year I was training.
Yeah.
I was training for football, and there's a big difference.
That's why if you get anything out of a first-year player, it's a blessing to me, because like you said, they train, they leave school right after the last game or after the bowl is over, if they played in the bowl, train for this combine. And after that, like you said, they combine train and they have to get back into football. You have a couple months before training camp. Now you had a whole off season to do football and get into it. That's why I always say the jump between the first year and the second year is big for all these players. And if you think the Lions rookies last year, you know, had good rookie seasons, they ought to have existentially better second years, because they'll be able to just play football.
Yeah, and you saw them play better over the back half of the season too.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, let's get into it, because first of all, let's get it right out the way, Scott. You've looked at a lot of these prospects. Lions have pick number 6. Do you think 4 quarterbacks are going to go in that top 5, or do you think the Lions are in the market for a quarterback? Is any one of those quarterbacks after the first couple worth pick number 6?
Two really good questions. I'd be surprised if in April you had 4 quarterbacks go in the top 5 picks. I just would. Mike, I don't know what you think, but the idea of a team trading up for a player like Bryce Young, I kind of bristle at it. I mean, I get it. He's a really polished player, but he's tiny. Like high school point guard, tiny. And it just makes me wonder, is a team really going to give up a bunch of assets to come up and trade a player as small as he is? And I think he's smaller than we even know. It wouldn't surprise me if the reality is he played in the 170s and low 180s as a quarterback, which is just super small. So, I think in order for 4 to go, a team has to make a trade up to Chicago with pick 1 to take a quarterback and kind of start that run. If that doesn't happen, then Houston gets to sit at pick 2 and take who they want. And it's possible that Arizona doesn't have, much in the way of trading. I mean, it's all speculative. I don't know. The second part of the question is, are the Lions involved in any of these 4? There's one player that stands out to me, but I'm afraid that Mike's going to reach through the phone and strangle me if I say his name. So I'm not going to.
No, I'm going to strangle Kenny, but go ahead.
You know who it is. It's Richardson. He is.
No.
Yeah, I know. Oh. So watching him, he already does some things at a fairly strong level that are not teachable. I know he's got accurate some he misses layups, and it's super frustrating to see it. Like, you know, he'll hit a 55, 60-yard throw down the field, and then he'll miss a running back wide open in the flat. And I mean, when I mean miss, I mean, like, he's 7 yards away from you, and you missed him by 9 yards. You know, so there are small fundamental things that need to be fixed with his feet, and sometimes he gets real toesy, and he'll get his feet way too narrow, and then I think there are times when he just relies on his arm strength just to rip throws when his mechanics are not great. But the things that you can't teach, pocket presence and stepping up in pockets and, you know, and navigating pressure and sort of being unfazed by pressure, those are things he already does pretty well. So, you know, in the end, I'd be stunned if the Lions did anything early with quarterbacks. I think you're looking more like potentially a player like Hendon Hooker, you know, a little bit later in the draft. Might
what
be
round
somebody
do you think
that intrigues
he's,
him.
What round do you think he'll go in? Because that's the guy I was looking at. And
I think round two is a place where
going
I mean, he's a first round player. It's just the ACL and the age, you know. But it's a deeper class.
Something like that.
He is 24, and you know he's got the ACL, and then the Tennessee offense is not really an offense that you would even consider. You're going to see that kind of stuff at the NFL level. So there's some progression that he's going to have to make that you haven't necessarily been able to see. So, you know, there's a little more at risk with him, but to answer the question, I would be surprised if they did take a quarterback at six. I would be.
Well, what about 18?
I mean, if you like a quarterback at 18, you probably should have taken him at six. That's just the nature of how right. Desperate teams are for quarterbacks. You know, I mean, if somebody falls that they really like, I suppose that's something that could happen. But I don't see any of the big four falling to 18. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why I was thinking that if the Lions trade back out of six, I could see them possibly taking a quarterback if there's no other player there. But there are players there that can help them this year. Jalen Carter, notwithstanding his police incident, Will Anderson, maybe Tyree Wilson. These are guys that can help them this year, I think. And I'm not a big fan of cornerbacks in the top 10. Mike knows how I feel about that. I'm still reeling over the Jeff Okuda pick. So I'm not in favor, especially when there's cornerbacks you can get in the second round or, you know, whatever, that may not be as good as the top guys, but are not that far off. And it's just the value to me is not a top 10 for a cornerback, unless he's Deion Sanders or somebody with incredible speed, can play offense, defense, do a punt, returns, kick off, you know, something more than just being a cornerback. I just don't see the value in a cornerback that high.
Well, and you're right, too. It's a very deep class of corners.
What about a kid like Witherspoon? There's an awful lot of people who like him and think he could be the first quarterback off the board.
Devin Witherspoon?
He
could be. Again, size. I think size matters when you're talking about a player who plays the way he plays. I think he'll be – I mean, he fits the Lions perfectly. He is a junkyard dog. He brings it all the time. It's just, you know, at five – whatever he's going to be, 5'11 range – and 185 maximum pounds, are you really using the sixth pick on a player small like that? I'm not sure that he's going to test great when it comes to some of the shuttles. I think he's fast, but I think there is some times on film when he does get run by when he's playing an off man. So, you know, when he's 7 or 8 yards off of the receiver, when he has to turn and run with them as he's meeting them, he loses ground. And it just makes me wonder if there's a little bit of stiffness in his hips. And then you'd look at the size thing. And I think he's much more a candidate at 18 than he is at six, but at 18, he's just kind of a slam dunk, you know, right. He fits perfectly with that, with what they want.
Right. Yeah. 18, I don't have a problem with a corner, but not early. Who is your best prospect? Who is your number one guy that you've seen so far that you say, Just give me the top couple of guys. Is it the quarterback first? Is it Will Anderson first? Is it Carter? Who is
it
your top
It is not
guy?
Will Anderson. I do not – I worry about Will Anderson's game. He misses a ton of tackles. I want to say his missed tackle rate, according to Pro Football Focus, is around 24% for his career, which is incredibly high. And I just worry about his fit in the NFL and his position, because I mean, if it's really weird too. I have a hard time with this one because he's obviously a very good player, but when you look at last year's film, he looks like a different guy to this year. And this year, it makes me wonder, because Alabama jams him inside and plays him as a 4-eye and sometimes as a 3 technique at 235 pounds. It's just weird to see it. So it makes me wonder if Alabama won't let this guy rush off the edge, and if he's not really winning against tackles off the edge. I don't, it's tough. It's a tough thing with him, and I know people love him. I don't like him as much as others do, but having said that, I understand what the lure is there. Tyree Wilson is a huge kind of moldable ball of clay. I don't think he's gotten great coaching at Texas Tech, but I think he can be, in multiple ways, in multiple positions, a kind of a monster for you. But to me, I think the best player in the draft is Jalen Carter, and I think he is exactly what the Lions need as a 3-technique interior rusher. Think about him and Aleem McNeil occupying 3 blockers, singling up Hutchinson and James Houston and Josh Pascal and anybody else that they've got coming off the edge. I just think his presence alone would take that defensive line and make it very, very dangerous. So that's kind of where I am. And from a Lions perspective, I think it's Jalen Carter is probably, their number one player.
Mike. Hey, Kenny, I'd like to ask you guys about a different player. That's an offensive lineman, Peter Skoronski from Northwestern. All of a sudden, he's in the top 6, top 7, top 8, something like that. What a team like the Detroit Lions, who are already strong at the offensive line, took another one in there, and all of a sudden you're playing with 5 aces.
Yeah, it's a great thought. He'd have to play guard. He reminds me a little bit of Rashawn Slater, where he moves great. He's got great feet. He's got good hands. All that stuff, but he does struggle a bit with power. So I worry a little bit about whether or not moving him inside the guard makes some sense. But if you're at 6. And there's the draft goes in a way in which some of the players that you covet are gone. There's a bunch of worse ways you can do things, and that really addresses the edges of your offensive line for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, between Penei Sewell and Skoronski and Taylor Decker, I don't think you'd really have to be thinking about tackle for a while. So I would understand it, and I don't think it's completely out of the realm just because he's a really good player. I think there are conversations in Chicago that the Bears are having right now. And I would tell, if they're stuck at 1, I would think Skoronski is a player they would consider.
Wow.
I know that sounds nuts, but, but if you don't love Will Anderson and you've got, Jalen Carter's got some of the issues that he's got legally, Skoronski can come in and play, 3 or 4 positions for you immediately at a pretty high level. It's not like they don't need that. They do. And you can't, with all of their needs, I'm not sure that if you're stuck at 1, that might be one of the better ways to help a player like Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got 2 last questions for you, Scott. First, 18 for the Lions. I don't know where you fall in on this, but Bijan Robinson, or your theory on running backs in the first round, what are they? And the second one is, give me your top 3 quarterbacks in the order you would choose them.
Okay, so we'll do the Bijan one first, because the mm-hmm. quarterback one is almost not going to – it's just not going to matter. It's interesting, because I understand where the NFL's gone with the running backs not being taken in the first round, but Bijan is a very special player. I think he is easily a top 5 player in this entire class, and maybe even better, maybe more than that. I don't know that there's a bunch of – teams that that it would make sense for them. Like, if you're telling me Arizona is going to take Bijan Robinson at three, I would tell you that's crazy, because it's not like they're winning, you know, and it's not like you have a good offensive line where you're really going to utilize him. But the Lions, incredibly, the Lions' winning window is it's open. Like, it's now. It's here. And when you look at the offensive line that they have and the offense they have, a lot of the, you know, the play action stuff and the things that they do, running power and all those things, it fits. Bijan fits perfectly. So I think the Lions are one of the few teams that could make that kind of a move, and it would make sense. Mike, I don't know what you think, but you know, the running backs in the first round are generally, I think, I mean, I get it that you wouldn't necessarily do that, but I think Bijan is good enough that he does fit in that range. He's a really good player.
Yeah, well, Scott, and Kenny might be in the same category as me. I grew up on running backs, okay? They were your number one player just about.
Yeah.
You saw him come off the board first, second, third, fourth, fifth, all the time. You don't see that anymore, and I think part of that is because if they're not doing it, why should I? And sort of,
yep.
They're kind of following the leader on that. But, yeah, this is a terrific prospect. And in my last – I've had two mock drafts out, and I really thought about him at 18, but he's still on the board at 18. He really is.
Yeah.
Not for ability, and that's just because I'm trying to project what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's tough to find a home for him before pick 18. It really is.
The only one I would say is Philly at 10. Watch them.
I know, but that defense is so old.
I know, but don't – right, but if you put Hurt and Bijan in the backfield together, we're going to need defense. I mean, we'll just outscore you. That's the only team.
Yeah, but I think you could say the same thing about the Lions at 18.
If he's there at 18 for the Lions, I'm grabbing him. I'm not Brad Holmes, but I'm grabbing him. If he's there at 18, I'm grabbing him, and I'm not looking back.
Well, he would certainly give you a ton of production very quickly. I just think that the thing that, you know, fans and you know, people need to recognize is that if you are taking a running back in round one, you really need to cement yourself in the idea that you can't pay him a second contract, which reduces the upside of the player. But, you know, at pick 18, you might take a corner who may or may not pan out. Flip a coin.
But
Bijan's going to work.
Exactly, and I hear that all the time. But my thing is, and I was talking to Mike about this, I think, last week, if I get 5 years out of any first-round pick, that's a success to me. And if you got 5 years on your running back and you're winning, you know, you're not taking three of these years to rebuild. You're starting to win right now. You're getting five prime years out of a back. That's a win. If you don't you didn't get to say, that's a win. So,
yes,
go ahead, Mike.
The other thing is, and if you get 5 years out of a quarterback, then you've got to pay him, well, 5 years from now, you've got to pay him $60 million a year.
Right.
You don't have to do that with a running back.
Exactly.
That's true. Because there's another huge, you know, wad of money coming into the salary cap and all of that. And it's going to – look, the players are going to get rightfully their share of it. And it's going to be the quarterbacks are going to get – the next contract is going to be $60 million.
Yeah, quarterbacks and receivers are going to really – I mean, absolutely. That's – you know, it's going to be an issue for the Lions. They're going to have to pay Amon-Ra, and they're going to have to –
maybe,
you know,
pay J-Mo.
You hope.
Yeah, you hope to pay. I said maybe pay him. That's what I said, maybe pay him.
Yeah.
And, yeah. All right, give me your quarterbacks in 1, 2, 3, 4.
For the Lions?
No, just give me the order that you think they are from the top one to the fourth one.
Okay. Are we talking about having to play them in year one? Or
No.
I'm doing
no,
my best to get out no, of answering no, this question.
just the ones which will – okay, put it like this. I'll make it easier
for you.
Who would
you take?
In 4 years, give me
one
to four.
I would take Richardson.
Richardson at number one.
I would take Richardson before I'd take any of these other quarterbacks, just because of his upside. I also know that it's a serious swing at the fences. I worry that Bryce Young cannot hold up physically at the NFL level. I just think he's too small. Mm-hmm. And then I look at Stroud, and I know that he had that nice game against Georgia in the playoffs. But I also saw him play Michigan twice, and I saw him play Northwestern, where he was doing some, not that he didn't play well, but just his body language off the field, bizarre things, reminded me a little bit of the Jay Cutler Chicago Bears stuff. Mm. And there's a little bit of a statuesque quality about his game where I worry that he is not a player who's going to make things happen outside the structure of a play. And I think, you know, fourth coming in fourth is a very toolsy player than Will Levis, but, you know, And having said that, I would tell you that I think the Houston Texans might be higher on Will Levis than they are on any of these other quarterbacks. So it's just going to be dependent on teams. Mm-hmm. But that's the way I would look at them. But understand that where I'm coming from, quarterback evaluation is very hard. There's so many things that we don't know that they're being asked to do. I know the Florida offense is a difficult offense to play in. The offensive line's not great. There's a lot of pressure. And they do ask him to throw the ball down the field a lot, which is there's a lot. So when you look at completion percentage and that kind of stuff, we have to help him a little bit there and bump some of that stuff. But it's undeniable that he needs to improve his accuracy, period. That's undeniable. But there are other things that are undeniable too. And, his ability to deal with pressure and, step up in the pocket and navigate these things is really good. For a very inexperienced player. So those are things that you really can't teach. But again, these guys are all going to be swings. You're just taking swings at the fence. That's kind of where it is with this position.
Well,
it'd be different. Like if Bryce Young was like 6'2 and 205 pounds, he would be the first pick. There would be no argument. And the Bears may have already made a trade. Because teams would be clamoring for him. He's that good. It's just a matter of his size.
Yeah, I'm going to give you this one stat, Mike, then you can ask your question, Mike. This goes to Richardson, who had like a 54% completion in college. Only four quarterbacks in the last 25 years have been drafted in the first round with that completion percentage, and I'm going to give you these four quarterbacks. So this is you can take this as you want. Kyle Bowler, Jim Druckenmiller, Ryan Leaf, and Jake Locker.
Uh-huh.
So he's in the class with those guys. Now, you see what happened with them. I'm just wondering, everybody talks about improving accuracy and improving, but that 54% is low, man. That's just low. And
it's low. I think if you look at his adjusted accuracy, it's in the low 60s. Just when you take away the throwaways and the drops. Having said that, he still needs to improve his accuracy. He just does.
But when you start taking things away, though, you can do that for other quarterbacks too.
Absolutely can, for sure. It just Florida's got a lot more throwaways. I mean, the one thing a lot of people don't talk about with him, and this is a little bit what I'm talking about with the pocket stuff, is that he saw pressure on 30+% of his dropbacks, and he only sacked 13 times last year. So, you got a guy who really does a good job of avoiding negative plays. There's a lot to like about him, but. Again, it's undeniable, and it would be silly to make the case that he's a complete prospect who's good to go. No, there's work to be done. That's why the Lions is a nice spot for him, simply because he wouldn't have to play for a year.
All right,
and that's a wonderful thing. It's just are they willing to swing for the fences at pick six? I don't think they will, but I like him more than probably a lot of people do. I also understand that quarterback evaluation is very, very difficult, and there's really, there's no great answer to any of that stuff. If you were to ask me a different question and ask me who I think of those four guys who becomes the best pro, most likely it's probably Bryce Young.
Mm.
I just wouldn't be willing to
gamble.
Gamble on a 190-pound, right. Smaller than 190-pound guy surviving at the NFL level. I just wouldn't.
I hear you. All right, Scott, we've held you up long enough. Mike, you got any last question over there before we let Scott go, or we end this podcast for today?
Well, just one thing about C.J. Stroud. The first time I saw him outside the tackle box is when he played against Michigan last year. He just seemed to be rooted to one position. I didn't see an awful lot of movement from him, and that would be one thing that would worry me about him. But I think he's a terrific prospect.
He absolutely is. It's just he is a pocket passer first and foremost, and there's really not more to his game. But he's a I think he's the most accurate thrower of the football. I don't think he's got a huge arm, but he's really accurate. The things that he does well, he does really well. It's just if you put him behind, let's say he gets drafted by Carolina, whatever. And that offensive line is pressured and he has to deal with pressure. It's not going to go well. Right. So the destination for him is going to matter a bunch. I think the Lions offensive line is good enough that a player like Stroud could survive and do good things. But we're seeing the trends in the NFL these days is that you need quarterbacks. You know, look at the teams that advance in the playoffs. The teams that are winning and making moves in the playoffs are teams that have quarterbacks who are somewhat dual threats, who can make plays outside the structure of a play. And when they're pressured, they're either getting out of the pocket and throwing the ball down the field still, or running a little bit. And that's just kind of where the NFL is.
All right, Scott, well, thanks for joining us today. And
anytime,
we're going
to
get you again before
you.
The draft, because I'm going to ask you about the Pittsburgh tackle, but we'll get to that next time. The D tackle, because that's the guy I've been looking at. We'll talk about that closer.
He's
to the
a
draft.
Fun watch, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he is. We'll talk about that. Michael Herod, I'll give you 3 weeks to get up on the same page with us, okay? Mike.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Yes, the Pittsburgh. All right.
See you guys. You guys be well. It was great talking to you.
All right, thank you. That's Scott Bischoff from the Detroit Lions podcast. And that'll be it today. Michael Herr from the DetroitLions.com. Check out his writings. Ken Brown, WJR, The Mitch Albom Show. And we'll see you next week on the K&M Podcast.